tuatai te wā mō Scorpio Book Spotlight e arotake ana I ngā pukapuka pāpai.
Yes, that's right. It's time for one of my favourite segments of the week. It is the Scorpio Book Spotlight. For anyone paying attention there, do not panic. It is not Monday. I'm not sure why the radio decided to tell you this. but anyway, for the Scorpio Book Spotlight, we've got the lovely Renata in the studio. Good morning.
Morena, how are you?
I'm very well. Excellent. Loving your red glasses.
Oh, thank you.
Mainly because, compliments with the red sweatshirt as well.
Yeah, it's all coming together.
Yeah, coordinated. How are you anyway?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, very life good. Well, Scorpio
it's,
books
it's
well.
It's lovely. It's there's a real feel of spring.
Yes,
in the air and in the bookshop.
Do you notice? Do you notice like seasonal trends in your purchases at Scorpio?
I don't know. Like people have been. We made a little display in the kids' store that's kind of spring books, gardening flowers. And, you can see people respond to that.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Because I know a few times recently, a number of quite good books on foraging have come out recently.
Yes, indeed. There is even a kid's book on foraging.
Really?
In the kids' store.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's probably quite good. And funnily, now that it's sunnier and the weather's nice, I've started thinking about buying one of those books. I'm like, maybe I should start doing some foraging.
You should. You should get into it.
Are you into it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Mostly autumn. I look for mushrooms, one particular mushroom, porcini mushrooms.
Oh, yum.
I know.
I love mushrooms.
Yes.
Anyway, spotlight today. What are we spotlighting?
So we're going to talk about a couple of things. First up, Self-Portrait with Nothing by Amy Pokwatka. Self-Portrait with nothing. It's not a memoir, it's a novel. It won the New York Times winner of Best Sci-Fi and Fantasy.
Oh, Sci-Fi and Fantasy.
I mean, okay. I'd sort of argue it's not squarely either of those things.
Oh, were you like surprised when it won in that category?
No, I mean, it's definitely got elements of that.
Right,
it's a book that would fall into a category that sometimes gets called slipstream, which I quite like, which is sort of literary fiction but slides into kind of speculative sci-fi fantasy elements.
I've never heard that term in a book context.
No, it's kind of a bit niche. I don't know where it came from.
It's fun.
But it's just, one of those, let's throw everything that doesn't really kind of fit anything else into this bucket. So the plot of this book is it's quite wacky. If I sort of just lay it out, it'll be
all right.
So the main character, Pepper Rafferty, was abandoned as an infant on the doorstep of the local veterinarian clinic in her town.
Okay.
And she's never met her biological mother. But she has, as she's grown up, she's discovered through a little bit of sleuthing that her mother was Ulla Frost, a famous painter who was mainly famous for the claim that the portraits she did of people would summon the doppelganger of that person from an alternate universe. So when she painted people, that would pull a version of that person back into the world.
Right. This suddenly sounds like it's a Marvel movie.
It's exactly it. Yeah. So it has got sort of multiverse elements.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So far so weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, I'm hooked.
Yeah. When Ulla disappears, Ulla the painter disappears, Pepper discovers that she's the sole heir to her mother's paintings, and she goes to find the paintings and discovers that a sinister organisation called the Everett Group is also very interested in finding the paintings.
Okay.
And not apparently because they're art lovers. They've got ulterior motives.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she begins to wonder whether her mother's bizarre claims might have something to them after all.
Yeah, right.
So no spoilers after that point, but it's part mystery, art heist, detective story, as Pepper sets out on Ulla's trail to find her or solve the mystery of her disappearance. But that's just kind of the engine of the plot that kind of allows a much more psychological story to unfold.
Nice.
About,
okay, cool.
You know, who was her mother? Who would she want her mother to be? Out of all the versions of her mother that she's imagined, who does she want to find?
It's such an interesting question to ask, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So she kind of, she does this really interesting thing of playing with the idea of multiple realities on a sort of psychological level. It's like, you know, what version of life do you want to be living? And how, given that you only do get to live one, how are all these other imagined realities actually pulling you away from
right.
the real moment that you're in?
Kind of like saying, is it sort of saying, pointing out like there's a lot of what ifs in life?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that you can become, you can get so sort of entranced with that idea that you can stop kind of actually living the life that you're in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
God, yeah.
Because,
wow.
And your point about the Marvel movies is apt because it's, you know, like we've all seen so many versions of that now. It's become such, you know, the tropes of it are so familiar.
Absolutely. That's a very good point, actually.
And it's kind of, you know, like it almost has this contradictory thing that happens where the multiple realities are supposed to kind of open up all these other possibilities, but eventually they kind of become self-limiting because it's like, well, you know, they can always just get out of trouble. They can always find a doorway to somewhere else. So it just keeps kind of, you know, instead of resolving anything, there's always another what if.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I've never sort of thought about that. Yeah, you don't have to find a resolution if there's, you know.
You don't have to find a resolution.
An alternate reality where that thing never happened in the first place, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
and it can kind of stop the characters from having to grapple with anything, you know. Like they don't have to, maybe if there's no loss and there's no death and people can always come back to life or be reformed or something, then there's no kind of psychological struggle.
Wow.
Whereas in this book, it goes right to the heart of that, you know.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
It is. It's
And like, it's not a light kind of topic for a writer to just tackle, you know.
No, I mean, she's someone who there's very little written about her. Like, I haven't found very many interviews or anything, but it did make me wonder whether she herself was adopted, because it kind of has that very, it feels like there's a lot of heart in the story.
Right. Wow.
That's kind of driving it.
Is this first novel, like a debut novel?
It is. It's a debut novel, yeah. Her new novel I've just read about is called The Parliament, and that the premise of that is a writing class for teenagers get trapped in the library where the writing class takes place because thousands of owls, murderous owls, descend on their town and start killing people.
Okay.
And she actually wrote it. I think I read this. She actually wrote the start of the book as two separate novels. She wrote a novel about the writing class and a novel about the owls, and then kind of like merged them. So I think she's a writer who kind of sets herself really interesting challenges and then sort of sees them through to completion in a way that's really, you know, unusual and different and surprising. Which I love, you know, I love it when I find a book that feels like, oh, this is, someone's done something really different.
Yeah.
It's not what I expect. It's not giving you just kind of all the beats that you think are going to fall into place.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
What's her name again, the author?
Amy Pokładka.
Pokładka.
Which I think might be Polish, but I don't know. That is just a guess.
Mm.
She lives in New York.
Anyway, how does the story wrap up well?
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's satisfying. It's satisfying because of the way it kind of issues a challenge to that multiverse idea, and it kind of says, "No, you do have to, you have to live with some realities."
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and the other book that I wanted to talk about is a kid's book, actually, which I haven't talked about much. It's called Paku Manu Ariki Whakataka Pōkai.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it's by Michaela Keeble, illustrated by Tokiro Brown, and it won an award in the recent New Zealand Book Awards.
Cool.
And it got a little bit of heat about a week ago in a column by Josie Pagani, a journalist, commentator.
Yeah, name rings a slight bell.
You know, she expressed her opinions about the book, which is totally cool and fine, and I think, you know, gets a conversation going about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But I just wanted to kind of give some props to the book because I think it's really cool.
Oh, and, good. Cool.
I was reading an interview with Michaela Keeble, the writer, and she said she wanted to write a book for kids who may not find their large families or their senses of humour or the ancestral forces that fuel their lives in other kids' books at the library or in school.
Mm. Mm.
And it does go to, because what she did was she wrote sort of verbatim things she remembered her son saying when he was around 7, and the kids got some hilarious kind of little, the way kids do. Kids come out with absolutely hilarious and sometimes profound and sometimes, they've got a lot of hyperbole in the way they talk. They'll say things in quite extreme ways.
Oh, totally.
You know, so she's captured all that really beautifully, and the illustrations are super cool as well.
That's such like an interesting, that's so clever though, just taking wee comments from your children.
Yeah.
And then kind of from that concluding what needs to be in a book. Yeah. I think it's really interesting.
And I think that the thing that Josie Pagani took issue with a bit was the idea that the book is putting adult words into a child's mouth, you know, because it talks about some aspects of colonisation and things like
right,
that.
Right, right.
I just think, you know, people should read the book and see what they think
about
it.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And they should read
totally.
It the way kids read books, which is, you know, kids might read this book and think, I wish I had blue hair like that character.
Yeah.
Or they might want to draw a picture of their living room because they like the way that the illustrator drew the living room.
Yeah,
or they might say, I think it's dumb, there's no story in it. You know, like, they'll have all kinds of reactions to it.
Yes, totally, totally.
And then they might come back to it and have a different reaction to it.
And, well, and also, you know, the things a child, which you've touched on, the things like a child will fixate on in a book.
Yeah.
Aren't the same things we as adults.
No, exactly. And you know, everyone will be able to remember their favourite kids' books, having things where, you know, just an image or an idea kind of transfixed them and just kind of hit them with this realization of, oh my God, somebody else thinks that too. Or they've never seen something put that way before. And I just think, you know, this book is adding to that conversation in which people can find something that speaks to them.
Right.
And,
good.
You know, all power to it.
Come into
the bookshop and check it out.
I really want to read that now. I'm super interested about it. And I don't know, I think children's literature is exciting because there should be more freedom with it.
Yeah.
And more, like...
Absolutely.
There are no boundaries, really.
Yeah. Nor should there be.
No.
Kids don't want things to be sanitised in the way that adults seem to want things to be sanitised for kids.
No, absolutely not. It's semi-related, but I was hosting a quiz for the Parent Teachers Association at the school my mother is principal at. And one of the rounds in the quiz was... It was essentially like a finish a sentence, and it was a kids. They had filmed kids saying things, and you had to guess what the second half of what they said was. And it's just wildly unpredictable what kids say. It's just hilarious.
Of course.